paid into Medicare for decades. Don't spend retirement limping. The Joint Relief Institute treats joint pain fast. It's covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000.
Thank you very much, Dolly McCarthy, but I'm going to say goodbye to you for a while here. Steve Bertrand here. Welcome to the Business Lunch. It's a rocky start. Steve Bertrand here on 720 WGN. Andrew Herman from DNA Info will be along in just a bit. You know, it's noon, so the bars are open. Do they wait till noon now? I don't know. But DNA Info has an accounting of the oldest Chicago bars, so that's an opening and closing of note, and we'll talk to Andrew in just a bit. Suzanne Mushin as well, the co-host of The Big Payoff, will be along later in the hour. But we start, as we do on Tuesdays, with John Najeri and the Option Monster. You see him on CNBC as well. John, welcome to the program.
Great to be back with you, Stephen.
Late this morning, President Obama sent his budget up to Capitol Hill, $4.1 trillion spending plan, and, you know, we could go over some of the specifics, but it's not got much of a chance with the Republican Congress, sort of a formality maybe. But I want to ask you about the fact that it is based on an annual growth that they're expecting for this year in 2017 of 2.6%, which is on the high side of expectations, but not so outrageous. What do you make of that number?
Well, I'm with you. I think it's not outrageous, but I wish it was conservative rather than so optimistic. I'm always happy to be optimistic, except, you know, when I'm spending somebody else's
right.
money.
Well, I suppose the idea is, though, if they come out with this blueprint and they know it's not going to pass, they might as well play with as much money as they can.
True. We, of course, just reported a 0.7% number for GDP in the fourth quarter. Now, they say the first quarter is running closer to 2, which I hope they're correct about. But obviously, even 2 is a far cry from 2.7%. And that's, of course, given what's going on in the world, a pretty optimistic number. Most economies in the world, absent what China posts, or at least what they tell us they're doing, nobody's running up there in the 2.6%, 2.7% range. Most of them are already in recession. I think we will avoid it, Stephen. I certainly hope so, avoid a recession, that is. But I just don't see the growth being as robust as that 2.7. But like you say, it won't make a difference anyway, because they're not even going to have President Obama's person come and present to Congress, because they're not even going to consider it.
They might as well project at 8% and then offered that free college tuition that Bernie Sanders is talking about.
Exactly. And there'll be more. We, of course, have Janet Yellen tomorrow.
Right.
To traders, that's a lot more important than what's going on in New Hampshire today. Although actual voting versus a caucus is a little more interesting, I think, to traders. The caucus was not, no disrespect to our friends in Iowa, but a caucus and how you create a winner or loser in a caucus situation is completely different than the actual counting of votes, which is what, of course, most of the rest of the country does.
All right, I want to get to the Fed in a second, but let's stick with New Hampshire then today, because I love watching all of that. I just love it. It's like the Super Bowl all over again for me. But Wall Street will be watching this. I mean, we're still a long way out, but it is a straight primary. You think that the traders are looking at it to get sort of a cue of what's coming?
No. I don't. And the reason I say it, so I don't mean to be dismissive.
No, I'm glad.
We're interested, but we already know that two of the candidates have really slammed down hard on healthcare, and you've seen some of the results of the selling in healthcare-related stocks. Biotechs and healthcare have been under extreme pressure this year, and that's because, of course, Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders both claim they're very much against these higher prices and need to find a way to rein it in. And then you've got Martin Scorsese, the not gentleman, but the shyster who was jacking up those prices for AIDS drugs so dramatically, 5,000% and so forth. So anyway, I think those the damage to that sector has already been done. So I don't really think anything that comes out of New Hampshire is going to change anybody's opinion about Hillary, Bernie, or Trump and where they stand. And I think those are the likely folks, two of those three, of course, are going to be the winners.
You know, Sanders makes a big deal of the speaking fees that Hillary Clinton has received from investment bankers and Wall Street firms. From your point of view, does Wall Street have a duck in this hunt? I guess a dog in this hunt is the right way to say it. Yeah.
Yep, they truly do. I mean, it is Hillary. Because they've paid her so lavishly, and Mr. Trump has come out and said that he is against things like carried interest, which is one of the ways that many people who are in my business, who manage money through hedge funds and the like, private equity, find ways to pay very little in taxes, or certainly a lot less than regular Americans. Trump's against that.
I'm going to interrupt you there, because that carried interest, is that the situation where it came up in the race for governor here, where Governor Rauner could call his income something other than straight income and lessen his tax bill? Is that what we're talking about?
Exactly, sir. Okay, instead of paying the 39.5% top rate, it's a way of getting a blended rate that is about 40% lower than that.
Right.
And
through
these carried interest.
To be clear, if I was in Governor Rauner's position, I'd take advantage of that too.
Yes, but I would as well. Until they change the tax code, I think everybody in that position should take advantage of it. But Trump has said he would repeal that or find a way to roll that back. And there's been no mention of it from the other side.
That's interesting. OK, well, I think that's a big plus for Donald Trump, because I think it's what Bernie Sanders says. That's a sign of how things are sort of rigged sometimes.
Yes, sir.
Let's go to the Fed then. So they're meeting later this week. I'm reading this, the newsletter, the Gartman letter from Dennis Gartman. And he says, come on, just lay off. Just be quiet. Leave us alone to sort this out. Right. Am I reading that correctly?
More or less. Yes. Janet Yellen and the Fed have these things they call dot plots. Won't bore your listeners with it too much, but it's basically them projecting out into the future, all the members of the FOMC, Federal Open Markets Committee, projecting how many rate increases they see in the next year or 2 years. In the case of the next year, they see 4 rate hikes. I don't think it's possible, Stephen, with the rest of what's going on in the world. So she'll be asked about that if they get a chance to ask that question. And she will most probably address, it's been 56 days since she spoke, she'll address how bad is the economies of the world, in particular developed world, how bad a shape are they in? I don't think they're in bad shape, but there's been a lot of fear-mongering. There's been a lot of these credit default swaps that have shot up in price because of Deutsche Bank, biggest bank in Germany, and some of the biggest banks in Switzerland, that all of a sudden people are focused on, do they have enough capital for some of the liabilities that they've got, just like our banks, which have now, I believe, significantly increased their balance sheets. So I don't think it's a problem here as much, except through some of the trades that they have on with the foreign banks.
One more statistic. The government Labor Department says today that the number of people who quit in December, 3.1 million, was up 6.9%, the highest number in more than 9 years, the number who people quit last month, which that's a good sign, right? That means there's going to be a lot more mobility in the job market.
That would be my read of it, too, that the more you see people willing to make moves and to basically jump, you know, without that parachute necessarily, they're sensing a better employment opportunity, either just around the corner or immediately right now. And that's a positive sign, Steve.
All right. On Wall Street this afternoon right now, the Dow is down 135 points. Oil is down $1.34. So its drop has accelerated a little bit in the past 90 minutes or so.
Yeah, it has. And we just got off the halftime show. We were just talking about that, because when we went on the show, the oil was about $29.30. Right now, that's West Texas Intermediate. It's $1.05 lower than that at $28.25. So like you say, that's 5% down on the day. That will be very tough for the markets to rally against because of, again, those same credit worries about, I think our banks have plenty of excess liquidity to handle it, but there's a lot of loans that have been made to those energy companies that are a little dicey at this point.
John Najarian, and you can follow him on Twitter at Option Monster. John, you have a stock tip for us this week?
We've been buying McDonald's here, quite frankly, because of strong activity in the options and in the underlying securities. McDonald's got as low as 112 yesterday, even against a negative tape, or in other words, the Market is down, whatever, 120 points. McDonald's is up another 38 cents today. That's a third of a percent. Pays a nice 3% dividend. And I think the continuation of this breakfast anytime is a big winner for that company.
All right, I'm going to go have a burrito in your honor.
Oak Brook-based McDonald's.
Breakfast burrito.
Thank you, Stephen.
John, nice to talk to you. We'll talk again soon.
Always, sir. Thank you.
John Najarian from CNBC. Again, follow him on Twitter at Option Monster. It's 12:22. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's a Tuesday afternoon, and it's cold Tuesday afternoon, and you know how I know that. Sitting in the studio, I watched DNA Info's Andrew Herman walk across the Michigan Avenue Bridge and into Tribune Tower for this little chat that we have on Tuesdays. And you looked a little chilly today.
I was all bundled up. I'm thinking about getting one of those Canada Goose coats for $900.
I was going to say, were you going to get it for the winter or for $900? I think $900 jumps out.
Because I got that long walk of a block and a half. I need an $800 coat.
This bridge is a killer, though. The Michigan Avenue Bridge is the coldest place on earth. All right, I want to talk because DNA Info, I teased, has a list of the 10 oldest bars, and we'll run through those. But first, really, the Jazz Record Mart has been a fixture in this city. It's over on Wabash now, kind of in a funky area of Wabash. I don't know how you describe it, Illinois and Wabash?
Or it's around Illinois and Wabash, right.
But it was right around the corner before somewhere. But it's been open since the 50s, and they're finally closing shop. And you guys kind of broke that story over the weekend.
Right. So they were this Jazz Record Mart, it's been run by a guy named Bob Kester, and he's been downtown since the 50s, and he's moved around a few times.
I've been in this city for 30 years, Andrew, and for 30 years I've been saying, I should go in there. And that's probably one of his problems.
It is a kind of a strange place, 27 East Illinois, so it's kind of like behind the Trump Tower. Even when I worked at the Sun-Times and the Sun-Times building was there, it was right in the neighborhood. And like you, I was like, I bet you it's interesting in there. Got to get home now.
There's a cool bookstore that afterwards is there. And I used to shop in there from time to time. Star of Siam, right? It's not too far away.
Sure.
But so the Jazz Record Mart is shutting down.
He's getting out of the business. He offered it to his children. Evidently, they don't see much of a future in Jazz Records. So he's selling off his inventory and getting out of the business. And something called Bow Trust Coffee is moving in there. And this is a small chain, primarily in the Chicago area, though I think they have one in California. But they are rapidly expanding, and they have plans. They have about 8 now, and they're going to double in size over the next few years. So they're going to move into this location at 27 East Illinois pretty soon, as soon as the Record Mart gets out. And they're trying to sort of kind of hold on to the old Jazz Record Mart culture in some ways. He's talking about maybe having some sort of record bazaar in there in which people can bring records in and sell them to each other.
A lot of the fried jazz fans from the 60s aren't going to notice the difference, right? If you put a couple records in there, maybe they'll come in and buy coffee.
Right. The coffee's better than the old record store, but
music, maybe not so much.
They'll see all their old friends in there.
All right, let's go to the bar.
Mm-hmm.
I'm reading this list, and I was reliving my youth, I have to say. So you've got a list of the top 10 oldest bars in Chicago.
Right.
And the first one is one, the oldest one is, strangely enough, one that I've never been inside, the Green Mill.
Is that right?
Isn't that odd?
Yeah. Well, so Janet Fuller of DNA Info put this thing together, and just like she did with the restaurants that we were talking about a few weeks ago, she's got some guidelines. Basically, you got to have the same name, sort of a continuation of the culture of the bar, and food can't be number one.
Right.
So Schaller's Pub, which most people think of as the oldest bar, which is actually the oldest restaurant according to the DNA Info list, it's kind of eliminated from this because it serves a lot of food. So eliminating all that, Green Mill would be the oldest one, opened in 1910 at 4802 North Broadway in Uptown, and it is a pretty cool place.
I know, I can't believe it.
Yeah, it's got this great marquee. You often see it just like in videos and films of Chicago when they're showing you the sights. And the outside is marked by this very cool old-fashioned sign. And inside, it matches the sign in the sense that it has that same feel to it. And it has jazz there, has a lot of entertainment. It's also a big poetry place where the people do slam poetry.
We got to run through these because we don't have it. But the Southport Lanes and Billiards number 2, which was a Schlitztide house, which I didn't realize when those opened, they would only sell Schlitz products.
Yeah. Well, you know, after Prohibition, they split up manufacturing and retail. So
right.
They had to divest themselves. But yeah, that's at 3325 North Southport. Most interesting thing about that is they added the lanes during Prohibition in order to give it an air of legitimacy.
Right.
Like, because they were selling liquor, but they had to have some reason for being open.
Is that the one where the ladies were upstairs?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes, so there was a brothel upstairs.
So there was a dumbwaiter where they'd send the drinks upstairs and they put a bowling alley in to make it look like it was... Well, something else. All right, so that's that.
Yeah.
Zebra Lounge number 4, Stanley's Tavern 3 on the south side, Coke Door downtown.
Yeah, and the Drake Hotel. So.
And then we relive my life. So number 6, Durkin's on Diversey, 7, Kelly's Pub, 8, the Burwood Tap. Those are all within, and I guess Jake's Pub too on Clark, number 9. Those are all within like 6 or 7 blocks of each other. I know.
Well, you were probably there when they opened, right?
I was.
Opening day?
Kelly's. Kelly's is just a dear spot. It's under the L near Sheffield and Webster.
Yeah.
And they filmed About last night there. Remember Phil Walters, the Channel 5 reporter?
Sure, yeah.
When I was young and starting out, Phil was alive at Channel 5, and I would see him in there from time to time. And that was just a wonderful place.
Really,
Kelly's
you know,
Pub.
You wonder like what makes a good bar, and it's really a, sort of a continuation of a culture that you can connect with.
And
right?
That was a real culture there. Yeah.
It's a cool thing.
Jake's Pub and then Gold Star Bar. And we should talk. I could talk forever about these. And obviously.
Many drinks.
I talk too much about the Jazz Record Bar. But the Hideout tied with Simon's Tavern for number 11. So always good to give the Hideout a plug.
So plenty of places to get a drink in Chicago for a very long time.
Read these at DNA Info Chicago because there's a great history. I love the way. They were pre-speakeasy, and then they were under the table a little bit, and then how they came back.
They've endured, and when you look at bars coming and going all the time, it's amazing that some have lasted this long, but
right.
They've somehow managed to do it.
They've been here longer than the libraries, Andrew Herman.
Yeah.
Nice to talk to you again.
Okay.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch on this Tuesday afternoon. And Suzanne Muschen is in the studio as well, co-host of The Big Payoff. You can listen to that at WGN Plus. Suzanne, welcome to the studio.
Thanks, Steve.
You know, I was telling John Najarian earlier, I just love, to me, I can't wait to get home. You know, maybe make some popcorn, get on the recliner, and watch the election coverage. I just love nights like this. I love, you know,
the political
theater.
Thing,
yeah, this is even bigger. New Hampshire's bigger, I think.
Yeah.
So are you into that so much? Or
completely
are
into
you
it.
Good? All right, two things I want to talk to you about that have to do with what's going on in New Hampshire. And the first that we have to talk about is the Donald Trump thing that he said last night. He had one of his big rallies, several thousand people, and he's talking about waterboarding and how Ted Cruz, you know, he says, I thought Ted Cruz was going to like waterboarding, but then he said, no, he didn't like
right.
it. And a woman
yes.
from the crowd yells out a pejorative term referring to the female anatomy.
Yes.
How did we do? I mean, I think people can probably get it.
It starts with a P.
Okay. And then he sort of giggles and goes on. So I can't believe you said that. You shouldn't have said that. I don't ever want to hear that again. And then he said, for those of you who couldn't hear, she called Ted Cruz and said it.
Yeah.
It's jaw dropping.
Jaw dropping. That goes beyond political theater. So now we're in a conversation, Steve, that's actually dangerous. I mean, the fact that that isn't something being discussed all over Michigan Avenue today, that we have a presidential candidate who freely uses this kind of language, and we can break it down and talk about my point of view on it as a woman.
Right.
First of all, appalling that a woman said it in the first place, although I do think, not, I don't say although as a excuse for her, but I do think we've come to a place in our society where language has become so throwaway, particularly in the context of Trump, that I don't know that the woman who said it was actually following the bouncing ball by basically saying, if Cruz won't approve waterboarding, he's acting like a woman.
A woman. Well, okay, I don't give a care if she did or not. It's a vulgar term.
Vulgar term. And we have a candidate who's supposed to be at the top of our
And here's
ticket?
A woman who's in complete public. Complete public.
You shouting know? It. Not even, you know.
Right.
She was proud of it.
Right. And so it's certainly not a word I use. It's a word that I might hear other people, but I'm never
no.
comfortable there. And
no.
so, and the idea that here's a guy saying this on national television,
yes,
and it's going to do him no damage whatsoever. It's just such
Beyond.
An upside down world.
It's an upside down world. And I think that, you know, Trump going and saying, I could go out into the street and shoot somebody in the face and still not lose votes. The danger behind the things he's saying is getting pointier and pointier. You know, we're now at a point where he's saying things like using that word, which is so derogative.
Well, I'm
so insulting.
Yeah, I'm just interested in the idea of it being such a different era now, because it had anyone said that 4 years ago, it's a sinker. You know, I mean, Barack Obama said behind closed doors.
Oh, my God, a sinker for sure.
Obama said, you know, I know why they cling to their religion and their guns,
yes.
you know, because they're economically distressed.
Yeah.
There's some legitimacy to that. He was, you know, vilified.
Right.
On the other side, Mitt Romney says the 47%. You know, there are people who could make a legitimate political argument for that. He was,
yeah.
it might have cost him the election.
So here was a quote from a woman who responded on a website where this was shown. And it was a young, to your point, she looked young by her photo. And here's what she says. No matter if you love or hate him, he doesn't back down. That this is where we are,
right.
Steve. This is the low bar that this whole ship has sunk to.
It's a remarkable thing. And I don't know what to make of it.
And you also get nervous by taking a potentially feminist stance. Does that even boost him further? Does that actually make him happy to think that
right,
feminists
if you object to him on feminist
yeah,
grounds, right? Because
right.
he used the word schlonged,
yes,
you know,
he
a
did.
Phrase referring to Hillary Clinton before.
Right.
All right, let's stick with women
yep.
and younger women. And we'll do that with an older woman. Madeleine Albright spoke at a rally for Hillary Clinton this week, and she said something a little controversial, too.
Hillary Clinton will always be there for you. And just remember, there's a special place in hell for women who don't help each other.
Uh-oh.
Hillary Clinton will...
Yeah, well, Steve.
Oh, that was we almost Marco Rubio did it twice.
Exactly. I love that. That's going to be a verb now. Look, that wasn't helpful. It just wasn't helpful. The whole
is it true?
No, it's not true.
Okay.
I mean, look, there is a moment where every woman has to think twice about whether I'm in a board meeting and I'm facing a woman CEO, because there is so much a big spotlight focused on women in power right now. That said, to me, speaking of generational, that was a generational comment.
Right.
I don't think it helped Hillary's cause, because I think young women are taking the position and saying, you're telling me that I should vote for her just because she's a woman?
I want to get to that. But back to the boardroom, you know, as a guy sitting at a table also has to be very careful in talking to a woman who's a boss. Yes.
Yes. Yes, but that you're talking about political
Unless you're Donald
correctness.
Trump. Unless you're Donald Trump.
I'm not talking about political correctness. I'm saying if I'm in a room where there's a woman on the rise and I really disagree with her, I'm having two simultaneous thoughts in my head. One, absolutely, I'm going to take her on. And two, I don't want to undermine her. That is a tough thing to pull off.
Yeah, that's nutty to me.
Yeah.
So you want someone with whom you have a complete disagreement to succeed.
I'm saying that's what's going on in my head.
Right.
I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm just saying when you're in, no different, I would assume, than if this were a moment where African Americans or Jews or other people were rising through to positions of power, there's a certain kind of mindset. But let's not take this too intellectual. Let's get it back down to the ground and say that wasn't helpful. And the reason it wasn't helpful is because the argument for Hillary Clinton cannot be made on those grounds.
Well, that's what I wanted to bring up. I love the fact that, I mean, I don't know, love the fact's the right word, but I think there's a certain maturity to the whole movement in the fact that she can't
exactly.
get young women to vote for her.
Right. Maturity. It's still troubling, and it's troubling for a different reason, which is that the young women who are behind Bernie Sanders are Well, okay, let me not go political on Bernie Sanders. Let me just stay with the fact that I do think it's generational. I think we have a whole group of younger women who doesn't want to hear that old school argument of, ladies, we've got to stick together.
Helen Reddy's not singing anymore.
I'm Woman, Hear Me Roar. But I have to say that there is, to your point, a certain success, therefore, in having young women not even take gender into account, which is also, by the way, a reflection of what's happening in society. Gender is getting blurred. Gender lines are getting blurred. Gender as a defining feature 10 years from now will be a passing thought.
Maybe that brings us back to where we started and explains why that woman used such a vulgar term in such a public way, because it doesn't register with her anymore as a gender term.
Steve, in that context, meaning I think that what Trump has done is created a cone of acceptance wherever he goes, that there is a no holds bar wherever he goes. People can say what's on their mind and not get slapped on the wrist for it, just like him.
Well, we'll see. The voting is going on now, and he's expected to win probably tonight.
And can you imagine?
Who's
can
your number
you imagine?
Two? Who do you think is going to finish second?
I think that Cruz will.
You do?
I do. I think that Rubio actually got a real wrist slapping from Christie. I really do. I think that was very damaging.
Because that wasn't just, those weren't just names. That was a fault, and it was a self-fulfilling sort of thing.
Yeah.
All right, the popcorn's on. Here we go. We'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Thanks, Steve.
Suzanne Muchen is the co-host of The Big Payoff. You can listen to it each week at WGNplus.com. We're going to take a break. Oh, Suzanne, you should stick around because when we come back, I'm going to talk to someone who designed a dish towel that you could use as an apron, too.
You're kidding me.
No, I'm not. But that's.
Are you kidding me?
Well, it's actually.
I'm not kidding about the product. I'm just kidding that you asked that I would stay around
that
for that.
Kidding. No, that was a joke. But the housewares, online direct house lines.
That's great.
Is a big movement, and we're going to talk to one of the people about it.
Good for you. I'm not going to stay for that, Steve.
I'll give you the apron if I get it.
Thank you so much.
This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch on this Tuesday afternoon. Thanks to Kim Gordon and Dolly McCarthy. All right, so how do you buy your housewares, your plates, your dishes, your towels, your silverware? More and more people are buying them online. The global housewares industry grew to $331 billion in 2014. And more, there are these new online companies, manufacturers, designers who are selling directly to the consumer, sort of eliminating the middleman, if you will. One of those companies is called Snow. Andres Modak is the co-founder and co-CEO of Snow, and he joins us on the Business Lunch. Andres, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me.
All right. So we should say co-founder and co-CEO. That tells me you're in a relationship with the other co-founder and co-CEO.
That is a multi-dimensional one. We're actually a couple. We started the business, frankly, because we were our own consumer.
You explain that for me. You were your own consumer.
So when we started the business, it started out of a need that we found ourselves. My co-founder and partner, Rachel, and I were setting up our home together. And immediately in doing so, this was actually after grad school, we realized that there was no brand or offering out there that got us really excited. It was either entry-level, mass-market produced, lower quality goods, or it was exorbitantly priced goods in the luxury space. And not a lot in between that was, frankly, exceptional.
And so you're coming in somewhere in between, which means we're not going to buy your products at IKEA.
Absolutely not. You're going to buy it from us, and you're going to get all of the benefits that come along with that. You know, the product is exceptional in its quality. It's this on par, if not better, than a lot of the luxury brands out there that you would find at high-end department stores. But because of the model that we've developed and because of the way the relationship that we have with our manufacturers, we're able to offer that at an exceptional value, more so than just a price point.
You refer to yourself as sort of shopping to the post-IKEA generation. So the idea is that, you know, you get out of school, you get your first job, you live in stick furniture for a while, and then when it's time to step up, you want people to check out Snow.
Absolutely, and that actually carries all the way through into the later stages of life. What we found is that there's been quite broad appeal for this type of offering. Really, it's interesting because home is actually pretty complex. It's not just like fashion where you might have a sense of what you like, suddenly in your 20s or perhaps 30s, you're thrust into making decisions about your home that you weren't necessarily prepared for. What consumers and customers are typically doing now is consuming content, understanding, looking for additional sources of information to drive their purchases. Or what they really want, Steve, is that, frankly, a completely simplified process.
Now, well, you know, what strikes me is that there can be sort of a temporary solution or a bit of stability. And when you're post-IKEA, you're looking for a bit more stability when it comes to your glassware, your silverware, things such as that.
Yeah, that's 100% true. So what you want is quality. You want lasting quality. You want products that transcend trend, that will last through trends, that you can incorporate into your whatever look or style that you like. But you really want product that's low maintenance, that is of exceptional quality, that you know can live with you on and through the rest of the milestones in your life. And that's frankly what we're offering.
So what do you bring to it, Andres? Are you the designer? Are you the facilitator? What do you and your partner bring to this? What's your role here?
So the two of us are, frankly, entrepreneurs at heart. I grew up in a family of architects and interior designers. Design has always been, you know, close to home, if you will, part of my DNA. Rachel's background is that she actually spends a lot of time in real estate and hospitality. We run the company. We work with a very talented team of designers, of product developers, of marketers, of the, you know, tech developers, really talented people who all get very excited about design. And that's what ties us all together.
What was your first product?
We actually launched with a full collection of bedding, bath, dinnerware, glassware, flatware, because we really want to build a destination for home. And so it was across all of these categories, and we'll build on top of that as we start to build the assortment.
So I like that in a way. So in a way, your product was your brand to start with. It wasn't, it's not like someone who made a great burger who ended up opening up a chili joint too. You wanted the brand to sort of be the destination.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head, Steve. We spent a lot of time thinking about the brand because it wasn't just about absolutely stellar product using the best materials. It was about getting a brand that was going to punch up through the noise, that was going to get people excited about their home and thinking about the way that people really live. You know, you're so inundated with brands out there that have been around for a long time and showing you what they think you want to hear. But if you can show the person living with product in a real way, I think that's really going to cut through the noise. And that's what we found that our customers want.
Are you not in stores, correct? Not at all?
Not at all. All right. We're just online at the moment.
So here's my question, because I'm reading about your silverware. It sounds lovely. The fact that it's solid silverware and it's got some heft to it and it fits my hand and all of that. Andres, that's the sort of thing I want to hold before I buy. How do you get around that?
So we do a couple of different things. Because we're nascent and we've only launched 7 months ago, what we're leaning on definitely is getting our customers excited about the product remotely. Free shipping and free returns. It can get to you, you know, the next day for absolutely free if you're in the tri-state area, or if you're further afield, perhaps a couple of days. And then you can send it back to us if it doesn't fit exactly what you want at no risk to you and no cost to you whatsoever. Oh. That's already built into the model. Down the road, there's a lot of other things that we're doing to get our customers excited about coming to meet us in person and touching and feeling products.
Snow is spelled S-N-O-W-E. Is it snow.com? What's the website?
It's snowhome.com.
Snowhome. And I say that because you can check out the products, but you've got a really cool magazine area. I really like that a lot, Andres.
We did that because what we found is that, and I appreciate that, Steve, what we found is that consumers and our customers really love the idea of content to go along with the purchasing experience.
You know what you are?
You want the recipe.
Maybe you'll take this. I don't know. I don't know how you'll take this, but you almost strike me as a more legitimate Martha Stewart sort of thing.
That's a funny reference.
I know it's a funny reference. I haven't figured it out in my own head, but I think what I'm thinking is that, you know, you are selling upscale a little bit, but you're doing it online in a very different way.
Well, that's a huge compliment, Steve. We appreciate that one. She's built an incredible brand and an incredible level of credibility. For us, we're definitely targeting a more contemporary consumer right now, but what we do want to do is make it applicable to everyone.
That was awkward. I'm not sure that was the right way to go, Andres, but I don't know. It just struck me that way. So you're selling things, you know, above what I'm going to buy at Target, and you are sort of selling this idea of a lifestyle. So I think maybe it fits in one way or another. But listen, stay out of jail, okay?
Much appreciated, Steve. Thanks a lot.
Andres Modek is the co-founder, co-CEO of Snow. Look, it was great to talk to you. I wish you great success.
Thank you so much.
You bet.
Have a great one.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN.